This AgriTalk podcast is brought to you by AgriEdge Excelsior from Syngenta for resourceful growers seeking to enhance productivity.
A red tsunami, a purple tide pool, no matter how you characterize the result of last night's elections, the president may have said it best in a recent tweet saying, now we can get back to work and get some things done. But hey, can a split government actually get anything done? Or are we in for another 2 years of bickering? I'm guessing the latter.
From the studios of Farm Journal Broadcast, this is AgriTalk, agriculture's national talk show since 1994. Here's your host, Chip Flory.
Hey everyone, Clinton Griffiths, host of Ag Day, in for Chip Flory today. He's off doing a bit of traveling for the rest of this week, so I'll be sitting in the chair filling in here on AgriTalk. So excited to do that, and especially excited today. We have a farmer forum, and guess what we're going to be talking about? Some of the elections from yesterday. So much happened yesterday. A really interesting evening. I think a lot of it, your opinion of what happened depends on what side of the fence you're on. I think both sides are taking away good feelings and feeling like this was a win in both categories, which is interesting for politics, for both sides to be happy. So we'll have to see how people feel about it on our Farmer Forum. We've got some great guests today. Gary Niemeyer out of Illinois, Ken McCauley out of Kansas, Ron Soups out of Kansas as well. And of course, we'll be taking your calls. Feel free to give us a ring, 855-4-TALK-AG, 855-482-5524. You know, Democrats, as expected, taking control of the House, while Republicans retaining and expanding their grip on the Senate. We still have a couple of races that have been yet to be called, so that may actually grow a little bit more. While Democrats gaining governor seats, but not as many as they thought. There are some chambers that flipped to Democratic control that had been Republican control. So just a real interesting evening, a lot of things in the mix. And I think, you know, that maybe that's where we start with the news. Betsy Gibbon, national reporter here to kind of fill us in on what's been going on with these elections. Betsy?
I have everything in all and everything on the election. So that's all my news. I'm glad you didn't cover any more than that. I have nothing to talk about today.
Well, there's just so much to talk about, Betsy. Did you stay up late? Did you watch the returns pour in last night? Were you on, you know, hanging on every Chad as it was tallied?
I stayed up for a little bit. I stayed up for a little bit, but not all night. What about you?
Well, I was up till, oh goodness, I think I was up till almost midnight last night watching these returns come in. So I'm drenched in coffee today, trying to stay awake and, you know, keep the enthusiasm that Chip brings, you know, to each and every show.
That's true.
Doing my best here to fill in for the Chipmeister. All right, tell us what's going on.
All right. Well, as you said, lots of news to talk about this morning, and let's kick off with this. Democrats took control of the House after an eight-year dry spell of Republicans controlling the chamber. Democrats gaining more than 23 seats they needed to retake the majority. As you said, we're still counting some of those numbers, but it's still breaking up GOP dominance. Despite the news, President Trump on Twitter saying he's receiving congratulations from so many on the big victory last night, saying those congrats are from, quote, foreign countries that were waiting me out and hoping on trade deals, end quote.
Yeah, it will be interesting to see if anything shakes loose. And of course, we're watching this lame duck session of Congress to see, okay, now that we have this vote in, how many people were actually waiting to see what kind of referendum might there have been on the administration and their policies? I don't know that there was a big line in the sand there. So it will be interesting to see how some of these things that we've been watching, like the trade issues with China and other trade deals and things that are out there, what happens over the next month to 2 years?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, even though suburban voters pushed back against President Trump, elections showing rural America is sticking with him and his message. Voters in rural areas flipping the Senate seats, maintaining Republican control. Two Democratic losses are key to Republicans winning Senate majority. Democrats Joe Donnelly of Indiana and Heidi Heitkamp of North Dakota lost re-election bids. Both voted against confirmation of Judge Brett Kavanaugh for the U.S. Supreme Court. Both claim to be bipartisan senators in big red states.
You know, it was interesting. Claire McCaskill won 53 counties during when she ran for her second term.
Okay.
She only won five counties in this last attempt. She won Kansas City, St. Louis, Columbia, And lost to Josh Howley. Joe Donnelly won 7 counties along Indiana's southern border in 2012. He only won one of those last night. So rural voters still supporting those candidates in these big rural states on the Senate side.
And it's interesting when you look at some of the hearings like Heidi Heitkamp and Joe Donnelly with these Senate hearings a couple of months ago, speaking on trade issues, speaking of farmers and rural America. It's interesting how that all kind of played out, especially in these big red states when it comes to rural voters.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. There were a lot of governor's races out there as well.
Yes, I'm almost out of time, but I'll try to finish this up here quick. Democrats gaining fewer governor seats than initially expected. That's according to Farm Journal Washington correspondent Jim Wiesmeyer. Now, one in particular, a big race in Wisconsin. Conservative Scott Walker, who has been governor for the last 8 years, defeated by a razor-thin margin of about 1% to Democrat Tony Evers. Dems winning in other states such as Kansas, Nevada, Illinois, Michigan, Minnesota, but lost bids for governor of Ohio, Florida, Connecticut, Iowa, and South Dakota.
Yeah, interesting. Interesting races. Of course, you're going to be covering this for Ag Day tomorrow morning, so yep. Folks, be sure to jump on there. We're going to have a little more extensive coverage and comments on the show tomorrow morning. Appreciate you taking some time, Betsy. So thanks so much. All right, well, let's jump over to Margie Eckelkamp, editor Ag Pro Magazine. Margie, were you up late watching election results?
I was. You know, here in Missouri, our Secretary of State wasn't going to announce any official results until all votes had been cast.
Wow.
So,
wow, so they made everybody wait.
We were watching.
Yeah. Were you surprised by the outcome there in Missouri?
You know, it was
as a resident,
I watched the Senate debate, and the analysis after that was leaning toward Josh Hawley, and I think that just carried through.
Interesting.
But yeah, I'm interested in the farmer forum because you've got some key states that are going to be represented this morning.
Oh yeah, absolutely. We're going to have a great discussion. All right, let's talk about from the Ag Pro perspective, a pretty interesting program happening out in California with bees, which I found kind of fascinating.
Yeah, I wanted to share an example of state-based regulations that are really specific to a local agricultural economy and industry, and also sustainability, and that's the new BeeWare program in California, which is a great example of a proactive program using technology and collaboration to increase compliance. So this is getting beekeepers to register their hives. So then when pest control advisors are making an application recommendation, there's an even more accurate tracking of where those pollinators are located. California brings in over 1 million bees to beehives to help pollinate their crops. In the San Joaquin Valley, 85% of bees go through almonds before they go through other commodities. So really important that the agricultural industry as well as the Beekeepers Association came together in California. This is now a digitized, real-time updated
map. Yeah, I was going to say that. Digitized, which makes it a lot easier to look up and see where these hives are located.
It's replacing the county commissioner's corkboard maps with the pins
right.
in them. It also provides some additional, if you will, regulatory teeth to help enforce the mandatory registration of these hives to help protect pollinators and be responsible with any kind of application that may affect bee health.
Well, bee health, as you've laid out so beautifully there, is vital. It's very, very important to our food system. Margie, thank you so much. Hopefully you
Thanks,
get some
Clinton.
Sleep after a wild evening. All right, stick around, everybody. We're going to continue to talk elections. And, you know, where do we go from here with some great folks on our Farmer Forum? More AgriTalk coming up in just a minute.
Let's talk weed control. Today we have Mike Koenigs, market development specialist from Corteva Agriscience, with us to talk about common weed trends from the past season and solutions for next year. Mike, what are some of the common weeds that you heard about from corn farmers this season?
Across Illinois, we find problem fields with water hemp in every county. These water hemp have become very hard to control. Many of the populations have resistances to several modes of action, so it's really been a challenge. In addition to water hemp, we also struggle struggle controlling giant ragweed, morning glory species, velvet leaf, and in some fields, mare's tail.
Let's focus on those resistant weed populations. What can farmers do to resist the spread of that?
Farmers need to start building a strong weed control plan for 2019. The thing they should be looking for as they build that strong plan is choose herbicides with multiple modes of action. Start clean with a solid pre-emerge herbicide in the spring, and then we need to follow up by making our post-spray applications when weeds are no greater than 4 inches tall. And then lastly, we need to layer residual herbicide with those post-applications so we can provide residual deep into the growing season to keep those fields clean at harvest.
What other overall weed control tips do you have for farmers?
It's really good to be planning ahead. I know there's a lot of technologies. Corteva AgriScience offers several products that will fit this mark with multiple modes of action. Products like SureStart 2 herbicide, Realm Q herbicide, and Resicor herbicide will also give you multiple modes of action and all have a flexible application window.
What resources are available, Mike, to farmers to learn more about the weed control and management?
For more information on these products and other Corteva herbicides, visit PowerOverWeeds.com.
We've been speaking with Mike Koenig, Market Development Specialist from Corteva AgriScience. To learn more about weed control, visit www.PowerOverWeeds.com. Josh Miller is one of the founders of Farm Shots, a wholly owned subsidiary acquired by Syngenta this year. While working with a group of agronomists, Josh learned how tough it was for large operations to scout and detect pests, diseases, and deficiencies. In response, he developed Farm Shots. Josh, how exactly does your program work?
Healthy, dense vegetation absorbs light, and on the other hand, unhealthy, less dense vegetation reflects that light. Farm Shots works by using satellite images to find the differences in the amount of light absorbed by different areas of the field, generating a map of the field's plant health. Growers and their advisors can use this map to find areas of the field that may have issues and precisely target where a crop protection application should go.
Farm Shots is now built into Syngenta's AgriEdge Excelsior program. For more information on the tool, growers can contact their Syngenta rep or head over to www.agriedge.com.
Our name says it all. AgriTalk. Any questions?
All right, welcome back to AgriTalk. Clint Griffiths in for Chip Flory today. Hey, can you feel that? Can you hear that? There aren't any political ads running today. Can you just believe that after 8 months of just nonstop ads that we are at radio silence on some of that, at least for probably 2 or 3 weeks? Maybe after Thanksgiving, we'll start on the 2020 ads. Maybe after the first of the year. That seems to be the case. All right, today is a farmer forum. We have some great growers that are going to be joining us here. Feel free to give us a call. Jump in the conversation here. We're going to mostly be talking about elections, what happens in Washington, harvest. We're going to be talking about, you know, where do we go from here? What does it mean? How do we feel about all of this? Plus, how do we stay in business as we get through the rest of this year and into next year? All of that stuff up for grabs today. 855-4-TALK-AG, 855-482-5524. All right, on the Farmer Forum today, we have Gary Niemeyer from Illinois, Ken McCauley, Kansas, and Ron Soups, also of Kansas. Gentlemen, and Gary, we'll start with you. How was election night in Illinois? Kind of a shift happening there, at least in governor's races and some of the House.
Well, a great big shift, if you want to get right down to it. We didn't win one constitutional office, and we lost one or two congressmen. So this state has turned blue.
Yeah, so what did and traditionally, Illinois has been a pretty tough blue state, right? That seems to be the case.
Well, when you consider the state of Chicago being a part of Illinois,
right. You're
absolutely right, Clint.
Right.
Sorry, that was a joke.
No, I absolutely. I got you. So where do we go? Where does Illinois, and where do you feel like you go from here as a farmer in Illinois after last night's decisions?
Boy, it's going to be pretty tough. You know, there was all kind of promises by the governor of free health care or free kindergarten, children's, everything's free. So if you want to come to Illinois, which is already broke, you're going to get something free. I that was a message I got. I don't know. The problem is now they're getting down to where, as a farmer, they're trying to get into our property taxes, increase those to pay for all these bills that everything is just so wonderful.
Yeah, well, it sounds like it may be a frustrating few years. Let's bring in Ken McCauley, also out of Kansas. Kansas having a pretty interesting governor's race. Ken, I think a lot of folks were surprised to see the Democrat winner there in Kansas for the governorship, but you know, I lived in Kansas for a while. Kathleen Sebelius won as a Democrat there. It's not uncommon, from my experience.
It's not uncommon, Clinton, and I don't think it's going to be a terrible deal for us in ag. You know, there was a huge amount of people that were ready to have the school issues fixed in Kansas, and I don't see that happening, except Governor-elect Kelly is She's going to try to fix the problem, but we've still got the House and Senate to keep her in check. But no matter what, our taxes are going to go up. She's promised to fix and give this education anything it needs, and you know what that means. So, you know, I'm really thankful for checks and balances of everything, because we're not in the corner yet. But I was a little surprised on the House, and, you know, listening today that House numbers weren't quite as severe as they seemed last night. My congressman being elected, and he's a Republican again and fresh, he really doesn't know anything. And when I met with him a couple, 3 weeks ago, he says, "I'm trainable." He said, "Wouldn't you like to train me?" So I've got a lot of faith that that's going to happen.
Yeah, interesting. Ron Soups, also from Kansas. Ron, what was your take on election night 2018, midterm elections here?
Well, like Ken says, Kansas isn't afraid of a Democratic governor.
Correct.
We've done that in the past, and I don't expect her to be as extreme as some of the Democratic choices I've seen throughout the country. I think part of the problem here was I feel like the Republican Party in Kansas is kind of split right now. And that probably came through the actions of the last governor we had. I think Kansas overall is a soft red state still, even though we've got one area that turned Democrat around Kansas City. So,
yeah.
As far as representatives, we're about the same as we are the same as we were, except for that area around Kansas City. So, I think the big thing is not only in Kansas, but in the Congress in Washington, there should be something on the ballot about cooperation. And if they don't agree to that, then we shouldn't send them there. So same thing applies in Kansas.
Yeah, I think that it seems to be the consensus. I think the biggest question here, and Gary, you posed this to us before we started. So how are we going to legislate now? The House has the majority. Senate looks like they're holding their majority for the Republicans. Democrats have the House. How do we get anything done in a split government environment? You know, last night we heard 2B, maybe Nancy Pelosi, Speaker of the House, possibly going to run for Speaker of the House again, list off things like health care, drug costs, trying to bring those down, infrastructure. Those all seem to be kind of bipartisan issues, but will they do that? And Gary, what's your take, and how important is that to you? I think Ron said it's important to him. How important is that to you that gets done?
It is, and after you walk the halls of Washington, D.C., and you don't get any compromise, it's hard to talk to people. Let me give you an example in my perspective. If you take Nancy Pelosi and the Democrats, they voted, they pushed the issue of health care. Well, you know, you live by the sword and you die by the sword. For 8 years, the Democrats under Obama worked on health care. Obamacare. Mm-hmm. And then the opportunity came for the Republicans for 2 years to change that, and they didn't get the job done. So I think that's a lot of frustration with the Republicans. But the other side of it is, what are you going to do? You've got a limited House majority coming into this next session. You got a Senate, it's pretty solid, strong Republican now, I would say, and a president that's Republican. I think this is going to be kind of hard to do. However, getting back to what Ron said, you know, if you take our president, he's really not a Republican nor a Democrat. He was a pragmatist, in my view, and he was getting things done. So maybe he'll try to bring both sides together. I sure hope so.
Yeah, I think that at least that's been my opinion. Gary, as I've looked at the president, I wouldn't call him a, you know, traditional Republican by any means, nor would I call him a Democrat. It will be interesting as a deal maker, which I think he likes to tout himself as a deal maker, whether or not there will be deals get done, or whether or not, you know, the opposition party now in the House, if they will go along with any of these, will they say, okay, let's get infrastructure done, let's work on immigration, let's work on some of these things. Now, Republicans may not like the outcome, but Democrats may not fully like the outcome either. And so maybe this whole idea of, quote, compromise out of Washington might be the step that we take. I thought it was interesting that voters in some of the exit polls said that health care was their number one issue. 25% say it was their top factor. And Gary, as you mentioned, we've been working on health care for 8 years. Republicans had a chance to do something about it, really didn't show up with a great plan, a way to address the cost of health care. And I've talked to enough farmers and ranchers and family members to know that cost is a legit concern, and it is one of the biggest stifling factors that I think Americans are facing. How do we get over this and make it affordable? And Ron, I'd be interested in your opinion on, was healthcare a big issue for you, or what was, as far as when you were looking at this?
Healthcare has raised the costs of not only my family, but my employees. Sure. So what I'm thinking is, you know, you were talking about they're going to start campaigning again. So in my mind, that gives them 1 year basically to fix healthcare, and if they could do infrastructure and work on trade deals, those three things, they've got a plate full for 1 year. So my comment to them would be, you know, each time that you make a negative point or a negative statement, you need to do something positive. If they would do that, all of those things would be fixed in a year.
Ken, what is your take on these issues? Obviously, healthcare was a big, big part of this. The U.S. economy, maybe not as big an impact as a lot of people thought. Immigration, a topic that some were voting on. What was your take?
Well, I think that as they look at this election, I think they've got to realize that their votes that they've taken over the past couple of years made a difference in McCaskill for sure. And if they take that attitude, and I think everybody today has said the same thing, that if Trump will try to get it done, but I'm not sure the two parties are going to try to help each other. I think that mood is still out there. Pelosi, if she comes back as the leader in the House, I don't think her plan's any different. But I do think that they could move ahead. Just say they solve the health care problem first and move down the road here and actually help it. But the immigration thing, I don't know how they're going to fix that. So I think the power is still in trying to move it in too far a direction for the Democrats.
Yeah, we'll be interesting to see. Hey, you guys hold on for us. We're going to continue the conversation here after the bottom of the hour. We got a great farmer forum going. Feel free to give us a call, 855-4-TALK-AG. We'll be right back with more AgriTalk and some markets in just a minute.
They say to really know a man, you have to walk a mile in his boots. Well, my channel Seedsman has logged more miles than I can count in mine. As crops grow, so does his commitment to making sure there's nothing overlooked. And come harvest, we celebrate in the cab. Him working away, making plans for next season. Look, anybody can sell you seed. Only a channel Seedsman gives you everything you need to make the most of it. Find yours at channel.com/boots.
Growers face enough worries today. SDS and nematodes shouldn't be among them. Alevo seed treatment from BASF is the only product that offers effective protection against both SDS and nematodes throughout the critical growing period. Growers get amazing early season protection for stronger profit potential at harvest. So worry about weather. Don't worry about SDS or nematodes with Alevo. To find out more about Alevo and how to protect your soybeans, talk to your seed dealer or your BASF rep. Grow smart with BASF. Always read and follow label directions.
Time for Markets Now with the experts from Pro Farmer.
Brian Grady, Pro Farmer, joining us now. Brian, as we look at the market reaction to the election last night, soybeans down a little bit.
Yeah, and I don't think it necessarily has anything to do with the elections last night. We had the big run-up last Thursday. on the, you know, the hopes that there would be some movement on the U.S. and Chinese trade front side. Since that point in time, we've kind of been backing down, and I think we're, you know, just pulling back a little bit here ahead of tomorrow's reports from USDA. So 5 to 6 cents lower in most of the bean contracts right now. That's having an impact on the corn market, which is fractionally to a penny lower, and the wheat market is under pressure as well this morning. I think, if anything, you can look at the fact that the dollar's under heavy pressure, and yet we aren't seeing any positive impact on the grain markets this morning.
Yeah, wheat had a couple good days here on some condition ratings from USDA and other shipment stories.
Yeah, you know, I think the concern now is that some of those winter wheat acres won't get planted down in the southern plains because it's just simply they're out of time.
It's too late, yeah.
At this point, especially in Kansas. You get further into Oklahoma and Texas down south, and they still have a little bit of time, but the clock is definitely ticking.
As we switch over to livestock real quick, what do you think? Hogs were interesting yesterday.
Well, yeah, the hogs finished very poorly, failed to take out yesterday's lows, and we're bouncing a little bit here, especially in the nearby December contract. You know, we still have the discount to the cash there, and you know, so that's a supportive factor as well. Not seeing nearly as much buyer interest in the deferred contracts. And then the cattle market, it's under pressure. So some technical selling there and expectations for lower cash trade.
All right, appreciate it, Brian. Watch your report tomorrow. We'll be back with more AgriTalk coming up.
Find it now at shopfarmjournal.com. Brand new to the shop is The Best of Tractor Tales, as seen each week on U.S. Farm Report. This 2-DVD set features dozens of classic machines and the collectors who bring them back to life. You'll get one DVD that's all green, The Best of John Deere. The second DVD includes classics like Alice Chalmers and many more. Buy one DVD for $29.95 or buy the set for $49.95. Order today at shopfarmjournal.com or call toll-free 877-847-9599. You can find it now at shopfarmjournal.com.
Save time and capitalize on market opportunities with Pro Farmer's Daily Advice Monitor. Whether on your desktop or on your phone, visit tryprofarmer.com and get a generous one-month free trial. Pro Farmer only focuses on the news that impacts the market, so you won't scroll through pages of articles to find what's really impacting your business. Plus, get full access to cash bids, charting tools, and more. Visit tryprofarmer.com right now. That's tryprofarmer.com.
I'm Andrew McRae, inviting you to join me for Farming the Countryside, farmer-focused podcast. It's all about production agriculture. Farming the Countryside is available wherever you listen to your favorite podcast, and is brought to you by Nutrient Ag Solutions, the world's largest provider of crop inputs and services.
Welcome back to AgriTalk. Clinton Griffiths in for Chip Flory today on AgriTalk. Of course, we've got a farmer forum like we like to do each and every week. Great group of guests. We have Gary Niemeyer out of Illinois, Ken McCauley from Kansas, Ron Soup from Kansas as well. All right, gentlemen, let's talk a little bit about this election for a couple more minutes, because I'm interested to hear your take on whether or not you thought this was a full-out referendum on the president. You know, I think he's taken credit for some of the results. Some have said that they were voting against the president. You know, if you look back over the past in a midterm elections, presidents Bill Clinton, Barack Obama both lost during their first midterm elections. President Obama losing 63 seats in his first election. Clinton lost 54. Looks like President Trump's going to lose about 34-5. And we'll start with you, Ron. Do you think this was a vote for or against the president?
Overall, I don't think so. I think there were other issues that people were more concerned about, health care being one.
Yeah.
So, no, I don't think it was a referendum on him. And in fact, if you look at the votes in about every case, they were almost split down the middle. So it's the country, just the two different philosophies coming together. I'm sure the president had some influence, negative and positive. So that kind of offset itself.
So, yeah, Gary, what's your thought with perspective there from Illinois? Do you think this is a referendum on the president and his policies and the way that he's handling things, or was it more about Congress itself?
Well, let's take the president, for example. For the most part, he went around trying to help senators get elected. And quite honestly, I think he did a very good job in that respect, because this is a net gain on senators. I don't know, 3, 4, possibly more.
Could be up to 5.
Done.
Sure.
I didn't want to put Tester in there just yet, or McSally. But my point is, I think the American people got so frustrated by what happened in the Kavanaugh debates and all the stuff that came up negative about him, that it really hurt the Democratic Party in the Senate. That's what I think really happened. And out in the countryside, he tried to, if he was in a state, he would mention a congressman. But for the most part, I don't think that that had anything to do with it. But I am very concerned about what's going to happen now because of this change. We're going to get a farm bill passed before the end of the year. There's a lot of issues still hanging out there that affect us.
Yeah, we have a farm bill. We have the USMCA, the new NAFTA deal. Ken, what's your take on, are you watching to see if this lame duck session of Congress can get all of that done?
Yeah, I'm sure watching it. But I don't have a lot of faith in it. I think the animosity and the competition, if you have done with the parties, is still there. So I'm kind of leaning toward they're going to extend the farm bill. I hope they don't. We need the new bill out there for a lot of reasons. But as far as the President Trump influence it, I think the Democrats were fed up and they wanted to change it, and that's the where you saw the election go on their part. And I think the Republicans voted because the president was involved and did some really good things for us. So, if you look at it from both sides, I think it influenced both parties. So it was interesting to me that we had a lot of things on the ballot. The marijuana issue is all passed, and they're going to have marijuana running all over the place, but the gas tax did not. I think that's an issue where maybe all voters, if somebody else said no, they would like that issue. But the gas tax, it was immediate. You felt it, and as soon as it goes in effect, you're going to see that. Nobody wanted to pay that tax. So yeah. I think we're going to deal with that here in the next forever, maybe, but for sure the next election in general.
There are some state issues out there. One of the things we haven't really talked about, guys, is trade. And, Ron, as you look at this, obviously agriculture's had some concerns about some of these trade and policy issues, the tariffs and how that's going to impact the flow of our own goods in and out of the country. Did trade come up in your mind, or is that an issue you feel like maybe the president's making some inroads on and you're going to give him a little more time on it?
Well, I am on an advisory committee with USTR, and I do think he's making progress in there. At this moment, I'm sure talking to Japan, and they've been talking to China, and I think China's kind of been holding back to see how this election would come out. And so I think things will start changing there. But it goes back to, will the Congress approve this NAFTA deal like it is, or are they going to try to make changes? Well, they can't make changes because he has trade promotion authority. So I think NAFTA, or the new...
Right, the new NAFTA, sure.
The new title they have for it, the new title.
Yep,
USMCA. I think that one is, going to be okay. But the future ones that aren't trade promotion authority, they may have some problems.
Yeah. Gary, as you talked elections and discussed this, how important was trade and what's been happening on the trade front in your decision?
Well, there's a lot of concern both sides, and I'm personally for giving the president a little bit more time. I find this kind of interesting, though. This, in regards to the second market facilitation program payment that's going to be coming out here in December 3rd, there is, quite honestly, it could go either way, and we don't really know what's going to happen. But if the tariff issue is resolved at this G20 summit in Argentina on November 30th through December 1st, then the second payment may be lower. Or if Trump adds more tariff issues to China and is not resolved, and further hikes, expanded tariffs against the Chinese imports are announced, then the second payment may be higher. But I do want to say one thing, and this is via Farmer Forum.
Sure.
I want to encourage people to read the general information. This market facilitation program began September 4th and ends January 15th. So you need to have your information in by January 15th, or you will not receive a payment on this.
Yeah, absolutely.
And I think that's been overlooked a little bit.
Yeah, people need to know that that's coming up, and you've got to be able to get that information in. Gary, what is your take on getting this farm bill done in this lame duck session of Congress?
Well,
is it a big issue for you? Have we just forgotten about the farm bill? it is important, obviously.
I happen to be president of the National Corn Growers in 2012 when we had the same exact thing happen to us. And now the House Senate Conference Committee, it did not come together on it. And currently, since September 30th, 36 of the 39 titles of the Farm Bill have been not funded. But SNAP and crop insurance will be funded till the end of the year. Mm. I think farmers need the certainty. We need to get this Farm Bill done. I hope they do it on lame duck session. And, you know, I'm kind of like Ken a little bit here. My thoughts are, if we don't get an extension, maybe we ought to just create a disaster payment for hurricane relief for the people that's had the problems, and then maybe even develop a second market facilitation program for farmers who got caught up in this tariff issue. You know, doggone it, we need help out here.
Yeah, yeah. You look at the prices, soybeans down 5 cents today. It continues to be an issue out there. Ken, as you start to think about turning the page to 2019, where are you? What's running through your head at this point?
Well, I've heard a lot of guys talk about they're going to grow more corn just because the corn price looks more profitable. And we're going to stay the 50-50. We have been, you know, up as high as 80% corn like a lot of guys in the Corn Belt, but we won't do that this year. But one thing I'm hearing is the farmers that have got their checks for the market facilitation for soybeans, they're pretty happy with that type of deal. And, you know, you got to look at the fact that corn got slapped in the face on this one penny deal that you've got to realize that if you go down the road of asking for, like, some kind of program like a hurricane or disaster or anything that Gary just mentioned, you're at the mercy of, you know, what everybody wants you to have. So we need to work on really hard getting this Farm Bill done to get prices that are relative to what we have today with our profit scenario, because things are out of whack from where we've been. And I think it's really important that we get it. I just don't have a lot of confidence that it's going to happen. But, you know, everybody needs to load up and get your talking points and
sure,
start talking to people, because right now it's important.
Yeah, Ron, as you start thinking about 2019, and you know, you may have already been thinking about 2019, but looking, you know, out toward the future, what's your thoughts? You know, we had a Purdue Ag Barometer come out this week. It showed sentiments were up a little bit over the last about 20 points over the last month on some of this trade news. You feeling more encouraged about 2019, or still quite a bit of trepidation there?
Well, I think that's one of the problem farmers have. We're just too optimistic, so I still am. We're in a rotation out here. We'll probably stay in that rotation as far as crops. I do agree with Ken about and I've made comments about the corn payment.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it might as well have been zero. That might have been easier to handle. I don't know exactly how they figured the numbers, but concerning wheat, I know for a fact that when all of this started, we did lose at least a dollar. So now the 14 cents is kind of not catching it either. So I'm behind the president, and I think he's making progress. I've told farmers, you just don't know how much China's cost us the last 40 and 50 years. If you could add it up, you'd be on board. We need to make some changes.
Yeah, we're going to pick that up right there and talk about the impact of some of these trade deals and what 2019 looks like as we could continue our Farmer Forum right here on AgriTalk. Hey, stick with us or join us, 855-4-TALK-AG. Clinton Griffiths in for Chip Flory. We'll be back with more AgriTalk in just a second. Hi, I'm Ag Day host Clinton Griffiths, and I invite you to join me each morning as we cover the nation's food system, from fields of green to orchards of orange and livestock everywhere in between. America runs on agriculture, and here at Ag Day, agriculture's what we do best. Listen as our analysts track the markets, learn about innovations in technology and sustainability, and live the country lifestyle through the eyes of rural America. Join me, Clinton Griffiths, for Ag Day, the country experience.
Save time and capitalize on market opportunities with Pro Farmer's Daily Advice Monitor. Whether on your desktop or on your phone, visit tryprofarmer.com and get a generous one-month free trial. Pro Farmer only focuses on the news that impacts the market, so you won't scroll through pages of articles to find what's really impacting your business. Plus, get full access to cash bids, charting tools, and more. Visit tryprofarmer.com right now. That's tryprofarmer.com.
Find it now at shopfarmjournal.com. Brand new to the shop is the best of tractor tales, as seen each week on U.S. Farm Report. This two DVD set features dozens of classic machines and the collectors who bring them back to life. You'll get one DVD that's all green, the best of John Deere. The second DVD includes classics like Alice Chalmers and many more. Buy one DVD for $29.95 or buy the set for $49.95. Order today at shopfarmjournal.com or call toll free 877-847-9599. You can find it now at shopfarmjournal.com.
First-generation farmers are a special breed. Farm Journal business editor Anna Lisa Laca helps these ag unicorns tell their story on a new podcast, The First Years.
It may have been hard, but there's a lot of good things that came out of it. A lot of time we spent together and our kids, I think, were better for it.
Join me each week as I chat with first-generation farmers and ranchers who have what it takes, grit and determination, to start from nothing.
The First Years with Anna Lisa Laca is available where you access your favorite podcasts, iTunes, Google Play, and now the new AgriTalk app.
No matter what you do, you're always raising the bar, trying to do better than ever. New DeLauro fungicide for corn and soybeans can help you get the edge you're looking for. DeLauro has a broader spectrum of disease control and best-in-class dual mode of action residual. Plus, it improves plant health, so your top-performing hybrids and varieties will have the protection they need to help you achieve your personal best yields. DeLauro from Bayer. Keep raising the bar. Always read and follow label instructions.
They say to really know a man, you have to walk a mile in his boots. Well, my channel, Seedsman, has logged more miles than I can count in mine. As crops grow, so does his commitment to making sure there's nothing overlooked. And come harvest, we celebrate in the cab. Him working away, making plans for next season. Look, anybody can sell you seed. Only a channel Seedsman gives you everything you need to make the most of it. Find yours at channel.com/boots.
Channel Seedsman Adam Piggott from Cleghorn, Iowa, and I have been visiting about the maturity stage of the Channel Field Checkup Series. Last time, Adam explained how data and observations collected during the Field Checkup Series and the resulting Channel Custom Crop Report, how it helps farmers. Today, let's hear about some of Adam's personal experiences as a seedsman using the data collected from Climate Field View and the information from the Custom Crop Report. Adam, tell me about a time that the Channel Field Checkup Series really made a difference to one of your farmers.
The Channel Field Checkup Series allows me to analyze a customer's operation and their management style. After a specific instance of a Field Checkup Series visit, I was able to diagnose sidewall compaction for a customer. I was able to document and communicate my findings using Climate Field View and a custom crop report. The ability to utilize the Field Checkup Series allows myself and the customer to make adjustments for the betterment of their operation. The Field Checkup Series observations are almost always received with appreciation, as the customer always wants to know what improvements they can make or management decisions that will make them more efficient in the future.
That's what this is all about, right? Forming some kind of a partnership where you're trying to work towards the success that everybody wants.
The ability to utilize the Field Checkup Series in doing that shows that grower that I am committed to being out in the field and to understanding what's going on within his operation, and that my observations and my suggestions are only there to help him moving forward.
That's what it's all about. Okay, learn more about Channel products and the Field Checkup Series at channel.com. And you can find Channel on Twitter and Facebook. Just search Channel Seed.
We're AgriTalk, powered by Farm Journal, the name you've trusted since 1877.
Welcome back to AgriTalk. Clinton Griffiths in for Chip Flory. Today, as we wrap up another great farmer forum, we've got Gary Niemeyer, Ken McCauley, and Ron Soups. Gentlemen, let's talk a little bit about, obviously, we've been talking a lot about elections. I want to end on that. But before we get that far, let's just talk about how field work's going. And we'll start with you, Gary. You guys wrapped up out there on harvest?
So we were pretty fortunate this year. Quite honestly, we had a drought most of the summer until about the end of July, and then we had a flood, you might say, well, 8-inch rain altogether. And we had great crops. We're all done. We're through with anhydrous and everything. But going into this next year and following up on what Ken and Ron said, you know, our fertilizer prices here for nitrogen are about 19% higher than they were a year ago. Our DAP is about 14% higher, and our potash is about 5% higher.
Wow.
You know, the expectations are that we are going to have less corn supply because we had less acreage this past year. But, you know, we have gone, this is the fifth year in a row we've had pretty decent crops worldwide. The odds of going into a sixth year, I'm not so sure there. And everything is still price times yield. And I don't know, you throw the weather factor in there, which always is the challenge for every farmer out here. Are we going to have that great weather one more year?
Right.
I don't know.
Yeah, we don't know. And what are, you know, it's been a good run here. I know this year USDA is expected and has forecast. Of course, we have a new WADZI report coming out tomorrow, so we should have an updated yield expectation number. Some math I've heard thrown around this week, 2.5 billion bushels of corn still sitting in the field, 400 million bushels of soybeans still sitting in the field. Ken, do you think these yields are going to hold up as we get this new USDA number? And how are you doing harvest-wise?
We've got one day of harvest left, and I hope we get another day of sunshine, but they're calling for snow, so we might get a little bit of it. And the fields are still wet, but I believe the fact that there's a lot of corn and soybeans still left in the field, I don't know that it's going to make a lot of difference. There's it's just every time you think, well, the market's going to go back up for that reason. I haven't seen it. But, you know, the thing scares me, Clinton, and all these predictions is I think we're going to build carryover regardless, and corn especially, and probably soybeans with the way this trade deal's going. And we start building carryover, we're not going to have these checks come like in the PIC program and all the things that saved us back in the 80s. So we get up into creeping up to $3 billion carryover, and that's a scary thing.
It is, Ron. What do you? What's your take on where we sit harvest wise, and the way these markets are shaping up?
Harvest wise, I think out here about half the sorghum still in the field.
Oh wow!
From what I'm hearing, the elevators are full, so now they're going to the ground. So they've put a moisture limit on that. So the milo is going to have to sit out there, the sorghum, until it gets dry enough. Our ground is wet. Our wheat is in western Kansas and up and looks good, but the state's still lacking about 25%, you know, of seeded acres in wheat, just like Oklahoma.
Sure. It's big
so
numbers.
So I think we'll be down there. But my big problem here, I think, is what Gary was alluding to, my input costs.
Wow.
You know, when we have prices like we do, the input costs just eat it away. And one of the biggest input costs I have out here is transportation of supplies in and crop out. So when they talk about infrastructure, you know, I'm in favor of that. We need to get that and make it more efficient. We're starting to fall behind some of these foreign countries that are really rebuilding or building their infrastructure to start with.
Yeah, so you do.
We really need to take a look at that.
Yeah, infrastructure will be one of those interesting things to see if they can actually get some sort of compromise done. I know the president has talked quite a bit about infrastructure since he's been in office. Of course, we talked about it before. With previous administrations as well. So we'll have to see if we actually make any inroads. And what does that mean for rural America? Because we have long stretches of the country where, you know, out there in western Kansas, you can drive for a little while before you
we have a highway out here that's called the NAFTA Highway, and basically it's a two-lane road. So come on.
Yeah.
You know, what kind of a
scenario is that?
Yeah, it'd be a perfect target for some of that improvements. All right, guys, we've got just a couple minutes left. I'm going to give you last word. Gary, we'll start with you. Last word on elections, on farming, on 2019. Where are you at right now?
Okay, I want to follow up on what Ron and you were talking about on infrastructure. We definitely need blocks, and we currently have a lot of problems and high expectations that everything's going to be just-in-time delivery, but that's not going to be the case. My concern is, politically, that the D's will want to do away with some of the provisions of the past tax bill to create the money for this infrastructure improvements. I hope that takes place. One thing I did forget to mention early on is that in the state of Illinois, I would guarantee you we will have probably the first bill coming out of the next Congress will be about cannabis legislation. And I guess it's a form of a tax, but I don't know. These are all interesting times that we live in.
They are interesting times. Ken, last take. What do you think?
I'm really optimistic looking forward, no matter what my comments are. But, we got some CrossFit opportunities. Costs are a little higher than they should be considering. But looking forward, we get a rally and sell out this year's crop and hedge some new crop or more new crop. And, we're all geared around raising more crop. And we just got to figure out a way to get it moved and move on into out of the country and into these export channels.
And Ron, wrap us up for it. Wrap us up real quick.
My big concern is still input costs, and that includes the cost of machinery. I'm really concerned about enticing young people into farming. I don't see how they can afford it, because I can't afford it, and I've been doing it for years. So something needs to happen. Something needs to change.
Well, it is a tough road to jump into, as I think we all know that you guys are working hard each and every day to hold on to what you got and build for the future. We appreciate you. Thanks so much for joining us on today's Farmer Forum. Hey, we had a big election yesterday. There's a new air in the country. We've got a little more pep in our step. Maybe we're not listening to so many election ads out there. That's going to give us a little more positive outlook. Will something happen on trade? Will Congress work on a farm bill? We don't know, but here at AgriTalk, we're going to keep our eye on it. We're going to continue to discuss these things because they're important. They're important not only to our listeners, but they're important to the entire country. And I really believe they're important for the entire world to be able to continue to provide that food and nourishment that everybody needs and that America does so well. Thanks for listening. We'll be back with more AgriTalk tomorrow.
It's time to get dirt rich with new Poncho Votivo 2.0 corn seed treatment. The increase in microbial activity in the soil helps get more nutrients to the plant, and you get an average 3.8 bushel per acre yield increase over the original Poncho Votivo, all with the trusted insect and nematode protection you're used to. So be dirt rich, because that's smart. Ask your seed dealer for the new Poncho Votivo 2.0 today. Grow smart with BASF. Always read and follow label directions.
Current price times 1,000 acres, carry the one.
These days, it's hard to make the math work for your soybean fields. The BASF Liberty Link system with Liberty Herbicide makes it easier. Start with a 2-plus bushel per acre yield advantage. Add in lower system input costs and more complete weed control, and you get an extra $33 or more profit potential per acre compared to Asgrow Roundup Ready to Extend soybeans. Grow smart with Liberty Link and BASF. Always read and follow label directions.
Thanks to AgriEdge Excelsior for sponsoring the AgriTalk podcast. Talk to your retailer or Syngenta representative to connect with an AgriEdge specialist in your area.